Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. Our first speaker, deeply distinguished biographer, is Anne Sever, who began life as a Reuters correspondent, and her books include Jenny Churchill, Winston's American Mother, Ethel Rosenberg, A Cold War Tragedy, and her latest book this year to mark the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the camps. She's published The Women's Orchestra of Auschwitz, A Story of Survival. Ladies and gentlemen, Anne Sever.
Thank you. Well, that's a tough gig, following a joke like that. Where can I put my water?
Keep your mouth. I'll take it.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Keep your mouth close to the mic. Yeah.
Is that about right? Can you all hear me? Okay, I'll put it up a bit so I don't slouch. Oh, my goodness. How can I start talking about this book and spoil? You've all had a lovely lunch. It's a lovely sunny day. And you think I'm going to be telling you some terrible stories about appalling cruelty and torture and savagery. So I've decided actually that I'm going to try and talk about the good guys, or in my case, they're the good girls, because actually the subtitle of my book is A Story of Survival. And what I've really, really tried to do in this book is look at how it is a triumph of the human spirit, what on earth made these 45 girls and women in the orchestra want to survive. And it was many things which I'll talk about. I'm actually especially thrilled to be talking to you here today at the Oldie, because two of the best witnesses, well, in fact, the two survivors of the orchestra, were 99 when I interviewed them. One of them is still 99, so I've had about four interviews with her, Anita Lasker-Valfish. The other one, sadly, is no longer alive, but I did manage to catch her at 99. And I can honestly report that her spirit was still extraordinary, and I really have learnt a lot from all the people that I've interviewed. But the times that they were remembering, in fact, all the witnesses that I've interviewed, were when they were kids, when they were children. And in the course of my professional career as a journalist and author, I've interviewed an awful lot of oldies. Am I allowed to say that? I think I'm allowed to say that here. And I just find it not that overused word privilege, although it is that, but it's a joy, because assuming that they still have a good memory, they have an amazing memory for this time when they were young. And why wouldn't they? Of course you would remember a time when your life totally changed, when you were plucked out of your home and deported God knows where. So I have found it really amazing to hear the stories of when they were deported from their homes and taken to an extermination camp, Auschwitz. And then, when they were in Auschwitz, that they were told to play in an orchestra. And that's the first thing that I really have to explain to you, how bizarre this was, this absurdity. What on earth is the most sublime of all the arts, music, doing in a camp that's dedicated to extermination, brutality, and sadism? So my answer, first of all, is that you can't make sense of it. I don't think one should try and make sense of the Holocaust, but I do think it behoves us to try and talk about it and talk about them and to understand it. The whole project was absurd. It made no sense, it was ridiculous, but it did save 45 lives, so that is not ridiculous. It was absurd that they had to practice all day. For about 7 or 8 hours, they had to play in the morning as the women, the other women, went out to work, because they were theoretically a marching band. Then they practiced for 7 hours, then they had to play in the evening when they came back. And not only were they starving and hungry and fearful, but they were hated as well. So they had an additional difficulty under which they had to labour. So I'm going to tell you about some of the nonsensical absurdities beyond saving Jews in an experiment that was dedicated to exterminating Jews and having music as part of it. So these women were saved by the main conductor of the orchestra, who was a woman called Alma Rose. Alma Rose was Christian. She was baptized. She was the niece of Gustav Mahler, who converted to Catholicism. Her mother was Justine, who also converted to Catholicism. Her father was Arnold Rose, who converted to Protestantism. She was baptized and had never been in a synagogue, but according to Nazi rules, she was Jewish. So when they saved her and said that as long as she conducted an orchestra, she wouldn't be killed, and she was on the operating table for a pseudo-scientific experiment of fertility when they rescued her, if you like. And the condition was that she ran an orchestra, and they were so proud to have her in the camp because she was musical royalty. So they had to redefine her as a Mischling, not really Jewish or half Jewish. So Alma decided to take it upon herself to save as many Jews as she could. So she almost quadrupled the size of the orchestra. It had been floundering at about 10 or 12. The Nazis insisted it had to be half Jewish, half Christian, so the only way she could do it was to increase the size. And she decided to take singers. Well, there was no room for singers in a marching band, but she used them to orchestrate and to write out the parts for this top-heavy orchestra that never had any brass instruments. It had only one bass, eventually a cello, but it was full of piccolos and recorders with teenagers who probably had 2 years learning their instrument in school. So no wonder they had to work so hard to learn how to play. And these arrangers, amongst other things, worked with a grand piano, which was obviously requisitioned from a family in Oswiecim, a grand piano in Auschwitz. It makes no sense. And with this grand piano, they rescored the duet, the quartet from Rigoletto for 4 female voices. There was a young Greek girl who was about to lose her place in the orchestra because she'd been ill. So her older sister suggested, well, I think my sister could play the double bass. They found a man in the men's camp, and the men and women in Auschwitz were not allowed to mix, and a man came across and taught this young Greek girl the double bass until she was good enough to play. So, you know, you can't make sense of how, at one level, the Nazis are killing as many Jews as possible, but they're teaching a young Greek girl the double bass. So that tells you something about the spirit of sisters, and there were sisters in the camp who saved each other, and the spirit of mother and daughter when the Hungarians were deported in vast numbers. And there was a mother and daughter who got off the trains, and of course in Auschwitz, if you were 40, you were consigned straight away to the gas chambers. And the daughter said, oh, no, no, my mother's a wonderful musician. She was a dressmaker. So the daughter saved her mother. And there are those sorts of stories that... So amongst the characteristics that I think we see demonstrated in Auschwitz what gave these women their spirit to survive. One of them wanted to survive for revenge. One of them wanted to survive to bear witness, to tell her parents what had happened to their young son who had been gassed. Some of them wanted to survive to marry and have children. And then, of course, the one great exception, the 99-year-old I mentioned, who's about to be 100 next week, Anita Lasker-Valfish, she wanted to survive for music, and she has. She's the only one who found music a solace and continued to play, was a founder member of the English Chamber Orchestra. For all the rest, their link with music was completely broken. If you ask Anita what helped her survive, she would say luck. But I think it's the spirit of determination, of hope, the fact that they managed to save a young pregnant Hungarian girl because they all had bloated stomachs, so hiding one more young girl with a bloated stomach didn't really make much difference. But having saved the young girl, she gave birth to her son, and then both were gassed. And I just want to name her. She was Eva Benedict, because nobody knew her name. They just knew there was this young, pregnant girl. So just a brief word about memory, because, of course, all these women had different memories of what they went through. And a word about music, which was, of course, broken. But in my view, all these women were heroines, I think, because they did the greatest thing. They resisted and they survived. And Hilda, the other 99-year-old, who was really my moral compass throughout all of this, when she was in Belsen, she made sure that they all had an equal amount of soup, the turnip at the top one day and the turnip at the bottom the next day. And when she was asked by a journalist why on earth she cared about this when she'd seen so much horror around her, she said, "I just want to say when the war is over, that I've done my best, because otherwise, if you don't live your best that you can do, what's the point of surviving?" So I like to remember Hilda, and I don't always live by it, but just to do the best you can do is really the moral of I think, my book. So thank you for listening.
You have been listening to Radio Aldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial" as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter "old trial".